Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Today we have with us a special guest, Atherton Drenth, who has authored the book, The Intuitive Dance, Building, Protecting, and Clearing Your Energy. In this book, Atherton guides you to master the ego by utilizing your innate intuitive abilities and helps you to find the way back to the inner calm. Atherton is a certified medical intuitive and holistic energy practitioner. She's been in private practice since 2000 and has conducted over 35,000 healing balances on clients around the world. Atherton Drenth also offers yearly workshops and was featured in the documentary Voyage to Betterment as one of 12 experts in the fields of conscious research and spirituality. And I have read this book, and there is so much in here that I want to discuss and ask about. So let's get started, and I'll introduce you to my special guest today. Good morning, Atherton.
Good morning, Randy.
It's really great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Yeah, thank you. I found your book to be very relevant to what I do, and also really to, I think it, there's information in here that everyone can relate to.
Yes, I agree.
So what is The Intuitive Dance?
So The Intuitive Dance is a book about how to master your ego using your intuition. And basically you can break it down into three separate parts. The first part is understanding your ego and its role in your life and then how to master it. The next is discovering how your intuition is a tool to use, is a tool that you can use to learn how to master that and then how to use it in your everyday life. And then the last is to learn how to manage your intuition effectively so that it can improve your life. And the, you know, the deeper message in the book is learning how to master your ego by using, utilizing your innate intuitive abilities to find a way back to inner peace, like you said in the introduction. And ultimately what ends up happening when people do that is they dramatically reduce the stress and anxiety that they feel in their lives.
So in your book you say that crazy voice in the back of your head that whispers a constant stream of sweet insults at you, callously reminding you with a stern coldness of what a failure you are. You always react to it since it is your voice and it must be true. So mm-hmm. we all have this voice going on in our head. And if we don't pay attention and realize that this is programmed into us, and it's old messages, then we live by that voice. But we can reprogram that, can't we?
Yes, we can, because we need to understand that our ego is a very important part of who we are. You know, I spent most of my young adult life thinking that I had to find some way to destroy my ego, to run away from it, to ignore it, to make it irrelevant. And I was quite shocked to discover that we need our egos, and our egos are actually very important, but it doesn't mean that they run the show. And that was a turning point for me, was understanding that my ego is a part of me, but it isn't the director. That my intuition is my connection to my higher self, which is the true director, and that the ego is just a component of myself that's been formulated based on events and circumstances that I grew up with as a child. And so often the ego forms these belief systems that we think are the truth, but they're really the lie. And if we are reacting to the lie of the voice, then it makes our lives very confusing and stressful and anxious, and we can suffer from a lot of guilt as a result of that. But if you can go in with your intuition and start examining what the ego is really talking about and start to look at it as being a frightened little child who doesn't really understand, who doesn't have emotional context, it only has a story, it only has a belief that is formed to make itself safe, then you can understand how you can use your intuition as a tool to be with your ego and help it to form new beliefs, new healthier belief systems.
That's such an interesting approach. So we come into this world really a blank slate, and our, I guess we begin forming our ego from, you know, the very first moment that we take a breath, right?
Yes, and I think it's important that people also take into context the fact that, I mean, I believe in reincarnation, as I'm going to assume that most of your readers do as well, that every soul comes into this life with at least three or four lessons that they're looking to learn. So they have chosen their life experience because they're looking to learn how to master these three or four particular things. So many of their ego complexes, ego beliefs, are going to solidify around those three or four core lessons. And we often don't figure out what those lessons are in our life until we're much older in life. So the analogy that I use is you can have two children, identical twins, playing in a sandbox, and they each have their own identical toy. A stranger can walk up to the sandbox, lean over, and simultaneously take each toy away from those children at exactly the same time. One child, ego's response, is going to be, oh, well, and pick up another toy and get on with the rest of their life. The other child can be totally traumatized and develop beliefs that strangers can't be trusted, don't let anybody close to you, things will always be taken away from you. And it all depends on the child and their soul and their life experience. Does that make sense?
Oh, my gosh, yes. It makes total sense. You know, I found something really interesting, and it sort of really relates to what, because most of the people that I deal with, most of the people that I counsel have had childhood experiences that have, you know, well, we all have childhood experiences that mold our, you know, our adulthood. But in the case of the people that I work with, most of them are extremely painful. But what I found interesting, you said that if someone is picking up something that isn't right, so their intuition is telling them that something is wrong. And I always say to people, you know, work with your children on helping them trust your intuition. But what you said is something I hadn't thought about. And you said, by being honest with your response back to them, you are validating that they are correct. Instead of denying when they come in and say, well, are you and Daddy arguing?
Mm-hmm.
If you say, yes, but it's not about you, that changes the whole dynamic because it keeps their ego from making it all about them and stops them from making incorrect assumptions. I thought that was so very important.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I work with a lot of parents who have highly intuitive children, and they think that they need to protect their children. And what they don't understand is that they're not validating their child's intuition, and they need honesty and clarity. And if they do that and they can teach their child to trust their intuition, then what they're actually doing is giving their children tools to understand how to live their own life and be in control. They're less likely to be bullied as a result of that. They're less likely to be fearful and have problems with stress and anxiety. because they're getting validated at home. Oh, mommy and daddy aren't happy with each other right now, but it has nothing to do with me. That's just them working things out.
So important. So very important. Mm-hmm. I really, really like that. That resonated deeply with me. So you say that we evolve and our perspectives mature, mm-hmm. and that at some point in our journey of life, we kind of get lost. And when we rely on other people to give us direction, we sometimes go the wrong way rather than learning to trust our inner calm,
mm-hmm.
And the voice of our intuition. Can you speak about mm-hmm. that a little bit?
So I found it very reassuring when I read the analogy that there are many ways up the mountain, but you're always going to reach the top. And that helped me to work my way through a lot of the confusion that I had been going through in my younger years because I was floundering. We start looking for other people's advice because we don't know what to do next. Should I do this or shouldn't I do this? So, for example, I'll just use an example from my own life. When I met my husband, I was dating somebody else. But when I met my husband, I just knew that this was the person I was going to spend the rest of my life with. So I agreed to go out with him on a date. My husband and I got married very quickly. We were married 11 months later. I had a group of friends who were absolutely aghast that I was marrying this young man. He was totally outside of my circle. He was everything that was the opposite to who I was and how I was raised, and yet his family embraced me, and I felt that I belonged, and I knew intuitively that I was making the right decision. I had friends telling me right up until the day before my wedding, this is the biggest mistake that you've ever made in your life, this is never going to last, you're being a fool, how can you do this? Well, we're still very happily married 40 years later, and trusting my intuition and marrying him was the best thing that I ever did. On the other hand, before I met my husband, I was dating somebody and everybody loved him. They thought he was great. You know, I should marry him. And I thought, yes, I should. But I was miserable. So if I had followed through with what my friends had asked me to do, I think I would have been divorced by now.
Sometimes you're right. Sorry.
So, you know, the people around you base their decisions on their experience. So they really liked this guy, and they thought he was really great, and he was a wonderful guy. He just wasn't the right person for me. And how could they know that? But I was trusting their opinions because I wasn't trusting myself. And
right.
We end up all making a lot of mistakes because of that.
Right. When, you know, parents are responsible for teaching us how to validate ourselves from within.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such an important tool,
mm-hmm.
Because if we don't learn that as children, then we go into adulthood really looking for external validation, and that can make you crazy because it is not right for you always.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you. That's really great. You also talk about the eight stages of separation, which I
mm-hmm.
found really interesting because I know so – the people that I deal with, many of them have had narcissistic abuse issues from childhood, which means that
mm-hmm.
the parents have stunted their ability to have an identity. And
mm-hmm.
so can you talk about the eight stages of separation, because that really plays well into it?
Certainly. So the eight stages of separation explains how the soul and your ego and your aura evolve from the moment of conception until you reach adulthood. So in the beginning, we are all in heaven. We are a part of the collective. We are one with God, and God is one with us. And then at some point, we make a decision that it's time for our soul to develop further so that we have a deeper understanding of love and oneness with the all. So we choose to incarnate. So that becomes the first separation, conception. This is where we start to separate from the all, the God source, and we become our own separate energy at conception. Then the next stage is birth. This is where your soul now becomes separate from the mother. You are part of mother, but you are separate from mother. And then the next stage is around the age of two. We call it the terrible twos. And this is where the child's ego starts to take its biggest formative leap, because it starts to realize that it's separate from the parent. It still needs the parent, but then it can start making choices. No is a big word at the age of two. The next stage of separation is around the age of five, and this is traditionally in Western culture when the child goes off to school. And this is when they start to realize, oh, I am separate, because now I'm with all these other little souls running around, and now I have to listen to more than one person other than my mother or my father. Now I have to listen to the teacher, and now I have little friends who are also telling me what to do. So this is another stage. The next stage of development happens around the age of eight, and this is when the age of conscious reasoning begins, because this is when the eight-year-old, give or take a year, starts to realize how self-sufficient they are. I can get myself up, I can feed myself, I can brush my own teeth, I can make my own lunch, I can decide, yes, I like this person or I don't like this person. It's also generally around the time when a child starts to realize that they can survive without the parent. For me, it was going to my mother one day, and she was an artist, and she was painting a canvas, and I said to her, so who gets the artwork when you die? And my mother just laughed, and she said, oh, look at you, how well you're evolving. She said, you and your sister will get the artwork, and I was quite happy with that. The next stage of separation happens around puberty, around the age of 13, 14. This is the most difficult one, because this is when the child completely separates from the parent, the mother, and she or he starts to develop their own ego body. And this leads to the next 5 to 8 years of who am I, do I like myself, not like myself, listening to other people's opinions, giving them more credence than myself, denying a lot of my own inner turmoil because now I don't know how to handle this, who am I, what do I want to be. And then the last stage ends up around about the age of 20, 21, and this is generally, again, in Western society when the child is off to school or gets a job, gets married, and starts to have a family of their own. And then they realize they have to be totally in charge of making their own decisions, and they have to decide who they are and what they are and how they want to live their lives. Mm-hmm. Like I say in the book, if any stage is interfered with by a parent or a traumatic event, it will stunt that growth and convolute the rest of the separation. For people who haven't been allowed to do any of that separation, they often start to have that clarity around the ages of 50, 60, 70. And you hear people say, oh, I finally feel like I'm growing up, which I always found rather interesting.
That is so amazing that you say that, because many people come to me between the ages of 45, 55, and 60, something like that. And they say, I don't know why I never recognized the problem in my life. It's always been there, but now it sort of has really come to the forefront and I have to work on it. Mm-hmm. And, and I tell people this is very common, but I never mm-hmm. really understood why.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. Can you say that again?
So if any stage of that detachment or development has been interfered with, they will often not come into that clarity until the ages 40, 50, 60, because that's when they realize that they have to make the decisions for themselves, and they will use the statement, I'm finally growing up.
Okay. Wow, that's so important. Okay, so the next thing that you talk about in your book is how to identify our intuitive types, clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience, claircognizance. And then mm-hmm. there's a quiz in the book to help us discover which one is dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain what each thing is, what clairvoyance is, what clairsentience, et cetera?
Sure. So first of all, everybody's intuitive. Everybody's been born with this innate spiritual gift, and it's a gift I consider to be from God. The trick is realizing that there are four major types of intuition. Everybody has all four, but one will be more dominant than the other. Once you figure out what your dominant type is, it's much easier for you to start to understand it, trust it, and develop it. So the four different types are clairvoyance, which is clear seeing. This is the being able to see clearly in your mind's eye. People who can visualize things, artists, for example, have a tendency to be highly clairvoyant. Interior decorators, people who like to imagine, authors, writers, they can imagine the story playing out in their minds. The next is being claircognizant, which is clear knowing. It's the hunches. It's just knowing that this is the right thing to do, knowing that if I turn left, I'll get to my destination. The next is clairaudient, which is clear hearing, and that's hearing the little voice in your head. It's the one you never want to bring up with the doctor because they start to get a little anxious about that. Even though we are all listening quite clearly, without any problems, to that little ego voice nattering away in the back of our minds, which I have found always quite interesting. The last one is being clairsentient, and clairsentient is clear feeling, and this is where you feel everybody's stuff. And there's two ways to feel. One is through body clues, which means that if my friend has a toothache, I may have a toothache, but I don't know she has a toothache unless she says something. The other is just picking up on other people's emotions. Clairsentients are what we call the little human Velcros. They pick everybody's stuff up. If you're sad, I'll feel sad. If you're happy, I feel happy. And the tricky part for the clairsentients is that they always need to ask themselves, is this mine or somebody else's? So those are the four different types.
Right. And a lot of people call that that kind of intuition being empathic.
Yeah.
But I guess empathic can be a wide range. But you know, empaths tend to become human sponges and pick up on everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm one. I've had to learn how to deal with it. But you know, to my listeners, Atherton explains later on in the book different ways to protect yourself. So that's really important for you if you have that issue. So there are practicing our intuition. There are ethical ways of doing it. And this is another thing I found really interesting. And there are six concepts for doing this. And I think a lot of people will relate to them, but I just want to say the first one, and then I'm going to let you take it away. But
okay.
The first one is, just because you think you know doesn't mean you do.
Yes.
And that's very interesting. But a lot of times we know something, and we want other people to know the same thing.
Yes, yes.
And it's not always right for everyone, right?
No. Well, we're all familiar with the TV shows where a psychic just walks up to you and says, oh, by the way, there's going to be a death in your family if you don't do yada, yada, yada. And it shocks people, you know. It's a great entertainment value, but if you've ever had that done to yourself, it's incredibly jarring and threatening. And as we are all awakening up to our intuitive abilities, and I believe that we are evolving as a consciousness on the entire planet, because we're seeing so many children and young people who are highly gifted intuitives. And when you're intuitive, you start to understand, well, I can read you. Well, that means you can read me. Well, now what do I do about it? So the six concepts, I call them intuitive ethics, the first one being just because you know doesn't mean you do. The next is wait to be asked. Then only do as asked. The next is if you're not asked but wish to help, send them love silently and hand it over to God. The next is always ask, is this mine or does it belong to someone else? And then the last one is to be honest. So when you break it down and look at each component, it works this way. Just because you know doesn't mean you do. So just because you can sense, feel, think, or know how to fix another person's problem doesn't give you permission to discuss it. You need to stay present. If your friend calls you up and she's in distress and she's going on and on about her problem and keeps, and says, I don't know what to do, I'm really upset, your intuition is going to kick in and it's going to come up with at least six different ways to help her. And you want desperately to just share those little tidbits of wisdom, because if she just did this, I just know it would be all right. She didn't ask you. So my first question anytime I'm dealing with a situation like that is I will ask for clarity. Are you asking me for advice, or do you just need me to listen? And I am really surprised at how 80 to 90% of the time a friend or a colleague will look at me, pause, and say, no, I just want you to listen. I'm not asking you for anything. Okay, no problem. Then you bite your tongue. So now I have to wait to be asked. So if they ask for my advice, I will say to them, well, in my personal opinion, you can do A, B, or C, what do you think you should do? I always hand it back. Because when you do that, you're honoring their intuitive senses. You're empowering them. You are not imposing your will. Okay? And then only do as asked. Only offer advice on what the problem is. You know, if they've asked you, well, I don't know how to handle my boss, you can give them suggestions on how they can handle your boss. They're not asking you to how to handle their boss, how to run their career, how to manage their marriage, how to have the kids, okay? So we overwhelm people with our need to help. If you're not asked and you can see that they're suffering and you desperately want to help, all you can do is sit there and just repeat silently over and over again, I love you, I love you. And it's an interesting little exercise to try that the next time you're encountering even a store clerk that is being really nasty and giving you a hard time. It's just stand there and silently repeat over and over again, I love you. And just watch how they start to settle down. The next thing is always ask, is it yours or someone else's? If I'm talking to a friend and they're upset and I start to feel upset, I'm always going to ask, is this mine or somebody else's? If I'm thinking about a friend and I start to get upset, I'm going to ask, is it mine or somebody else's? Because if I think about somebody else, it means I'm connecting to their energy, so I could be picking up on what they're feeling at that time. And then the last is to be honest. Always be truthful in your responses. If my friends call me up and I'm having a bad day and they say, hey, Atherton, how are you doing today? I'm going to like give them an honest answer. You know what, I'm having a really bad day today and I'm just not up for conversation. Love you, but I'm going to call you back at another time. There is nothing wrong with being honest. We are so afraid of honesty because we think that they're going to be upset with us, they're going to get angry, they're going to reject us. Well, then they just made it all about them, haven't they? I'm being honest with you about my responses. And I expect you to be honest with me. If I call you up and you're having a bad day, let me know. And then I'm going to ask, are you looking for help? Nope. Okay, no problem. Love you. I'll talk to you another time when it's better.
Great advice. Wow. Wow. That's really profound information. We can all use it because, we end up giving too much information sometimes. And we can overload people. Yes, absolutely. And you know, yeah. And another thing that I believe is that when we give advice, we have to let go of the outcome,
mm-hmm.
and or give information or help. We have to let go of the outcome.
Yeah.
Because what we say is not necessarily going to end up the way we think it's going to end up.
No,
and
I
if
always
we
say
are,
that.
Right.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and if we hold on to the outcome, we're going to be disappointed and think that the person didn't hear us, didn't listen.
Mm-hmm.
So we can only offer what we offer, and then we have to let go.
Yes. I always say to my kids, advice is to be taken under advisement. If somebody offers you their advice, they want to be heard. They want to think that they've helped. They want to know that they've helped. So you listen to them, you thank them for their advice, and then you decide whether it fits for you or not. And if it doesn't, and if anybody ever comes back to you and says, well, if you had just done yada, 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 you'd be all right, I will turn to that person and say, you know what, that piece of advice was really lovely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It just didn't work for me, but I really love you for it anyways. People just want to be heard.
Yes, you're absolutely right. They do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I want to make sure that we get this in because this is really important. Can you talk about the vertical axis technique and then go into the way to use only one word with it?
Sure. So the vertical axis is a grounding technique that helps you to stay grounded. And a lot of people say, well, what does it mean to be grounded? And I went through the same thing in the beginning when I had everybody and their cousin telling me that I was not a very grounded person. And being grounded means that you are in control of your thoughts and feelings and emotions. So there are many different ways to ground, but I have found that the vertical axis to be the most powerful and effective grounding technique that I have ever come across. The reason being is that it holds, and it will hold in a crisis, and then it is a tool that you can use to not only to connect to it at a moment's notice using one word, but you can also use it to help clear your field of other people's energy. So what the vertical axis is it is in its simplicity and it is very quick and easy to learn, you can master it in less than a few minutes, is learning how to connect to heaven and earth at the same time and bringing that energy into your heart. When you have that energy in your heart, you send it out to your field and you send it out to your family and then you send it out to the universe. And Lord knows the world needs a lot of love right now. When you are in your vertical axis, you can ask the universe to gift you one word that will take you into your vertical axis at a moment's notice. And then you can use that throughout the day if you need it. Now, the thing is that if you do the vertical axis in the morning, it will hold for the rest of the day. You don't need to be thinking about it. You don't need to worry about it. And you don't need to use your one word. If, however, something happens that throws you off kilter, you bumped into somebody or you broke a glass or somebody snaps at you, then I will use my one word just to get me back in my center because I've just been thrown off my axis a little bit. It's very quick and easy to do. When you're completely grounded into your vertical axis, you feel calmer, you're more rational. There's a lot of clarity on what belongs to you and what belongs to somebody else. It helps to reduce a sense of overwhelm. It's easier to listen to your intuition. You can manage your ego voice much more effectively. I love to do the vertical axis before I go into meditation. I found meditation is much deeper. And the other thing I love about the vertical axis is it makes it very, very difficult to be manipulated by other people's personal agendas.
That's great.
Yeah.
Atherton talks about, you know, in the book exactly how to do this. It's a very simple technique. So if you get the book, The Intuitive Dance, by Atherton Drenth, then you will have the information about how to do this vertical axis technique and then how to use it with only one word. Atherton, where is your book available? Where is The Intuitive Dance available?
The Intuitive Dance is available at every major book outlet, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indigo in Canada, off my website. It's very easy to obtain.
Okay. And what is your website?
My website is www.athertondrenth.com, and that's spelled athertondrenth.com.
Okay. That's a really interesting name. Is there ethnic roots to this or anything like that to your name?
Yes, actually, the name Atherton, it's English in origin. It means dweller by the spring pond or chosen child of God. And
wow.
I was actually named after the first person my father ever fell in love with.
Oh, isn't that amazing? That's so special. Wow.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he loved that name, and he just told my mom that if they ever had a daughter, he wanted to call her Atherton, and my mother was thrilled, so.
I'm glad I asked that question. Okay. Okay, chat. There's a chapter about creating shields, and that's really good for
mm-hmm.
people who absorb energy. And then you talk about three kinds of energy cords and how to cut cords. What are energy cords, and why is it important to cut them?
Okay. Well, there are three types of energy that comes into the human body. The first one is the one that comes into the belly button, and that's called the silver cord of life, and that's our connection to the divine, and nobody touches that. That's between you and your covenant with the divine, period. If you ever read stories about people who've had an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience, they always talk about following that cord back to their body. The next are love cords, and you have love cords with anybody who's important to you, children, pets, relatives. But only you can remove a love cord. No one else can cut a love cord except you. Because love cords are a gift to you from God. So I can't cut them. The fear cord removal procedure in the book cannot and will not remove the love cords. Working with the angels, they will not remove a love cord. I think it's very important that people understand that. The reason being is that fear cords are very common between people that you love. And they're sticky, and they're an energetic nuisance, and they create a lot of problems, especially between parents and their children. It's like getting wrapped up in string. You get used to it, but it's very restrictive, or being covered in cat hair. So it's not pretty. It gets dirty after a while. So the cord cutting with the angels is very simple to do, and you call in. I work with Archangel Michael to do this. but you can work with any higher evolved being, whether it be an archangel, a Mother Mary, or Jesus. And I just ask Archangel Michael to cut cords with everyone that I've been in contact with on this day, everyone, including my loved ones, because fear is very common between parents and their children. You know, a thought, a worry, guilt, anxiety. I mean, even though I know about this and I know how easy they are to make and I know how to control it, I still make fear cords with my kids. And now I'm a grandmother, so I do a lot of cord cutting. It's just a fact of life, you know? You got to dust your house on a regular basis, so this is no different.
So why would we want to cut a love cord?
If you have been involved in a toxic relationship, then there's still a bond there that, you know, I'm always thinking about them. I, you know, did I make the right decision? Should I have done this? Was it the right thing to do? Those are those rare circumstances. I will say to a person, okay, then you can cut that love cord. And then I will guide them through that, but I won't do it for them.
Okay.
You know, so for example, if I'm dealing with somebody who's been involved in an incredibly psychotic, narcissistic relationship and they have finally managed to free themselves, it's very hard for them to break that love bond.
Yes.
But there can't be complete healing until they do.
Yes.
They have the right to do that. And they just needed to be guided through the process. And then that gives them permission to release themselves of that psychic obligation.
That's such a good tool. I'm going to be using that one. So let's see. Cutting fear cords. Okay. There are several methods, and in the book you talk about how to cut them in specific situations. Okay. I will be using this because I find that those of my clients who are coming after getting out of a narcissistic abusive relationship still have this connection that they don't want to have, but it's very powerful.
It is
very powerful. And this is an excellent way to help them to cut that cord. And after we cut it, how quickly do we feel relief?
Well, you know, I'm always amazed by that. People, I've seen parents break down in tears in the treatment room when I've done it between them and the child. I have seen people come back to me a week later and say the minute they walked out the door, the phone was ringing, and the person they just cut cords with is trying to get in touch with them. And for the first time in their lives, they can have a civil conversation with that person. I'm thinking of one situation where I was dealing with a woman who horrific abuse. With a narcissist, 10 years of the cords. It was just unbelievable. After she did the fear cord cutting, she was at a restaurant with a friend, and he walked right past her, and he didn't even recognize her. That's how dramatic they can be.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. You talk about also how to clean up the energy in your space. And do we all, you know, I know in your book you talk about how we have this aura and how things can enter our aura and create problems for us. So how do we clear that energy out of our space?
So I think people need to understand, like your listeners need to understand that everything is energy. So even our homes and our apartments, our cars have energy, and they hold on to things. So if there has been a lot of fighting in a house, for example, that energy starts to become very, very heavy because it sits there like a mist or a fog. And it's so easy to clear that energy out using the procedure that I have in the book. It only takes 5 or 10 minutes to do it. But a lot of people don't understand the importance of filling the space with something after it's done. So after you've cleared a room or your house of all negative and ungrounded energy, you want to fill it with something that has an intent to it. So in my practice, I always, once I clear the room, I always fill it with love, trust, and safety so that all who enter here feel love, trust, and safety. So in my home, I like to fill the energy with love and laughter and wisdom and everyone just feeling that they belong. So you can set these intents. And it's very effective. Feng Shui, for example, talks about this a lot, but they don't get into the actual space clearing per se. And once you have reorganized your house the way that feels right for you, and women generally know 90% of what needs to happen in a house, then you have this permission to go through your house and clear out the energy and fill it with love and light. So everybody who enters feels love, trust, and safety. How you know that your house needs to be cleared is funny things start happening. Your dog's having accidents, or you're blowing light bulbs, or the computer's not working properly, or you start hearing strange noises, or you break a glass, or you're tripping. Then you know that the energy in your house is getting muddled and heavy. And it's nice to know there's something you can do about it.
Yes, it is. It's very nice to know that there's something that you can do about it. And what to do about that is to purchase the Intuitive Dance by Atherton Drenth, and and all these tools that we're talking about are in here. Very fabulous book, really, really well done. So we are out of time for today, Atherton, but this has been amazing. I'm really, really happy to have had you here, to have learned about your approach in all these aspects of life and how to tame the ego and trust intuition. It's all very, very important tools for life. So thank you for the work that you do and for putting this book together so that we can share in that.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to discuss it. I really appreciate it.
So it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
So we are out of time for today, but if anybody has any questions or comments about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. I hope you will join me next time for more of a fine time for healing. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.